Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 73 of the Footmarks podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at DefMango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And the title of this Footmarks podcast is one that I'm really proud of. I came up with it. The Scarlet Mitch, right? Marvel fans will appreciate that because it's on Mitchell Santner, who with his scarlet beard, right? Let's not forget the beard. Demolished India by taking 13 wickets in the Pune test using chaos magic, much like Marvel's Scarlet Witch, Wanda Maximoff. And this is a guy, Jared, who had never taken a fourfer in test cricket prior. He just went on and took 7 for 53 and 6 for 104 in the same game versus India. And truth be told, I still cannot wrap my head around that.
It really is. I mean, I think we've seen players at times do something quite surprising, but it's probably more players that we haven't seen a lot of, right? Like you think of Hawani and Massey and, you know, kind of come from nowhere. They're thrown in and they take a bunch of wickets and then, you know, maybe they never play again or they peter out really quickly. Like, we all know like everything about Mitch Santner.
Yep.
Like, we know so much about Mitch Santner. And so it feels 10 times more surprising than, let's say, I don't know, let's say they picked someone from domestic cricket called Sitch Mantner, right? We'd be all of that. Wow, how good's this 32-year-old? How has he not played before? But it's like, wait a minute, what? It's Mitch Santner, and he's been good at this thing he's never been good at before.
Yeah, here's one thing I didn't know about him, though, is that he made his first-class debut in 2011. Funny how we've quoted Marvel or linked this to Marvel and the first Avengers movie hadn't come out. I mean, in 2011, I was using a BlackBerry, right? Facebook was the go-to social media app. And as you said, Elon Musk was just a cool dude as opposed to a right-wing nut job. So it's been a while since he's been playing first-class cricket, but he started off over there. And then 3 years later made his white ball debut and then kind of just transitioned into a white ball player. So a very weird kind of arc.
Yeah, I didn't realize that he played, I think, 4 or 5 games in first class cricket over maybe 3 or 4 years. And then he came back as a white ball player. And his first white ball game, he doesn't even bowl. So he's, you know, I don't know what his role in that side was or whether it was a green top or what the situation was. But he didn't even get a bowl. But yeah, he's very much in a situation where his batting and his probably his all-round fielding ability and everything else plays a big part in the kind of cricketer he is. And he goes on to be a fantastic white ball player. And for what it just, he never developed the red ball game. It just never worked. And I think the one thing that we realized, and I'm sure that will come up in a little bit, is I think a lot of it has been conditions based and everything else. But what I would believe, someone of his talent, right? We both know he's talented. No one's got that issue. But what we would have believed at a certain point is that he would have taken wickets in first-class cricket, right? Ishodi's got a much better record than him in first-class cricket, right? Ishodi isn't thought of as a great red ball bowler either, right? And I remember talking to a fairly prominent person in cricket, and we were talking about someone who'd made 100 against New Zealand, and I said, wow, he's made 100 against New Zealand, and he had to face Mitch Santner. And the guy said, well, that's like not facing a bowler, right? That is how he was thought of.
Yep. And I mean, prior to this test match, he had played 28, right? Before the Pune test, and he had 54 wickets in 28 tests.
That's a lot of test matches.
Yeah. What was his average again? 42, 44? Something like that, right?
42, and in first class cricket, it was also 42.
Yeah.
So which I think is ridiculous. The more unbelievable number.
Yeah, it's gone down to like 36 point something. And he now has 67 wickets because he took 13 in this game, which is 19.5% of his entire test wicket tally in a single game. And that is just flat out ridiculous.
Like, yeah, especially that far into your career, right? Yeah,
we know that he's good at a lot of things, but test cricket wasn't one of them, Jared.
No, no. And I remember, I'm trying to remember, there was a test match I was watching him bowl once. And I was just watching him thinking to myself, he could bowl forever here and not get a wicket. And yet I wasn't looking at him going, this guy's a dud.
Yeah.
Like I was still thinking, he's putting it roughly in the right area and, you know, he's spinning it a little bit and it's maybe coming off the pitch a little bit slow and everything else. But like it's there, it's working. It's just not good. You know, it just doesn't do anything at the other end. And this test match, I remember early on before he took his wickets, you know, I think I was on with Gareth Batty and we were talking about it and we were saying to each other, geez, he looks good. Right.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing of like, and I was thinking to myself, oh, maybe he just always looks good. And then he doesn't. And then he just was unplayable from then until the end of the test match. And it was like a different switch had been done. And, you know, I watched some of his bowling in Sri Lanka. My God, Bayram. That was bad. Dude, what did he average, 170, 190 or something in that
190
series?
Or something. Look, Jared, I remember when we previewed the New Zealand-India test series and we both had Bracewell ahead of him. We were like, Santner shouldn't even start. And I mean, of course, Bracewell had like the birth of his child or something.
Yeah, Bracewell was ahead of him. It wasn't just us. Bracewell was literally going to play ahead of him, right?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, of course, he becomes this white ball asset as soon as he, you know, starts playing the format. But what I found really interesting, and I remember when this happened in real time, right? You texted in the Good Areas chat saying, guys, how many test spinners or slow left armers or whatever are 32 years of age? Because that's how old Santner is.
Yeah.
And we gave you a host of names. In fact, Shubo even gave you Santner's name, which was really hilarious.
Where he was just like, I think if I Mitch Santner is 32, and I was like, I'm not surprised.
So basically what you found was that if you compare the number of deliveries that Santner has bowled as opposed to someone like Keshav Maharaj, who is 2 years elder to Santner, but both of those guys come from countries where spin bowling is not really looked upon as something.
And Santner's a better bat.
Yes, he does bat better.
So, you know, you would expect him to have played more as well.
Yeah, but you know, when we compared, or you compared the number of deliveries he has bowled to other spinners who are his age, around in and around 32 years of age, he was right at the bottom of the chart, right? 10,000 deliveries for a 32-year-old spinner is a very low number in first-class cricket.
What was Maharaj? Is he 35, 25?
Something like that.
Yeah. So
and he often doesn't even get to bowl much in test matches when South Africa are playing at home.
Exactly. So a lot of that might be county cricket. But again, no one's really Mitch Santner for county cricket because he doesn't take any wickets. But the one that surprised me was the one who was closest to him, which was Ish Sodhi.
Yeah.
Who I don't think of as a first-class bowler at all, right? Mm-hmm. And yet he was, what, 50% more balls again? I think he was at 15,000 compared to 33% more, sorry. I think he was at 15,000 to Santner's 10,000 or something like that. And so you... Everywhere you look, and he's younger. I think he was the youngest on my list as well. I think he was a little bit younger than Santner. It's like, there's just no one who'd ever bowled so few deliveries who's been around forever. You know, I mean, we're talking about a, 13-year professional career, and he's bowled 10,000 first-class balls. Like, work that out per year, and you start to understand what we're talking about here. This is not a lot of deliveries to have bowled in that amount of time.
Yeah. Also, I'm just curious now, how many deliveries has Joe Root bowled in his first-class career, right? Because I just checked his test numbers and he's bowled 5,800 and something deliveries over there. I reckon he's bowled more deliveries than Santner. I would suspect.
I can't imagine because he wouldn't have had any first-class spells, would he? He's bowled 4,500. So you're kind of still right. He's bowled basically half of what Santner has bowled. And he hasn't played in first-class cricket all that much. So just looking at this, I think, and I'm just, I think I'm coming up roughly about between 120 and 135 overs a year of red ball cricket is what Mitch Santner bowls. That's what Yasir Shahra and Okumle do in an afternoon.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I think you looked at this wrong, Jared. You looked at the runs that Joe Root has conceded. He's bowled 8,562 deliveries in first-class cricket.
Oh, sorry, you're right. You're right. I did look at that wrong.
Yeah, because I was like, how can he have bowled more deliveries in test cricket than he has in first-class cricket? But
no,
yeah, I mean,
do you know what? This always gets me. If you go to the Cricket Info page, if you go to batting, it's got matches, innings, not outs, runs. Hmm. If you go to bowling, it's got matches, innings, balls, runs. And so balls is completely moved, whereas and it's BF for batting. And it's I've done that before. I did that with Courtney Walsh one time. And someone got really angry with me, going, I can't believe that you got these numbers wrong. And I was like, I was reading them live on air, but that's what it is. But you're right. So he's almost bowled. So Joe Root has almost bowled as much as Mitch Santner, right? And let's have a look at his first class bowling average, 47.86.
There you have it. You know, so it really is flabbergasting that Mitch Santner, who is primarily a spinner. Sure, he can bat, but he is primarily a spinner and he's bowled that number of deliveries, right? 10,000 is just simply not enough. But anyway, you went on further and then you compared Santner's record. Yeah, go a bit deeper. Of course you do. But you compared Santner's record to other spinners that he had played in the matches that he had played. And then, you know, we came to the conclusion that he wasn't off by an awful lot. He'd done all right. Funnily enough, though, when it comes to bowling in Asia, he was out bowled almost every single time by other spinners in the matches he plays, which really adds further to this mystery.
Yes, I was shocked when we checked him versus other spinners and he did so well. And I came away from that thinking to myself, he's actually probably just been on a lot of crappy wickets and he's slightly above par. But remember, he has a bit of batting, so we kind of expect him to maybe not be a complete frontline bowler at all times. Hmm. And then we looked up the Asian one and I was like, my God, I've never seen a spinner struggle so much in Asian conditions. He just can't take wickets in Asia. And of course that I'm looking all this up while he's taking nothing but wickets in Asia. And it was like the previous eight games, he'd never taken any wickets in Asia. So
I mean, just consider this Sri Lanka tour, right? You spoke of how his average was close to 200, 190 something. And we said that he might not have even played had Bracewell been available. So this is some weird multiverse of madness crap that's happened over here that has led Mitch Santner to take 13 wickets in Pune.
We went through each individual test when he was in Asia. There wasn't a test until this one where he had been a plus. So in every other time, if you compare him to all the other spinners in the game, he was a negative. Sometimes he was a slight negative. Hmm. Sometimes he was a massive negative. But he was never a plus. Like, he had not even accidentally had a test match in Asia where he was a good bowler.
Yeah.
Right? And that is mind-blowing to me that you can be that bad.
India have a bit of a trend, right? Tom Hartley, Mitch Santner, Steve O'Keefe. We spoke about this at the previous
podcast. So someone sent this to me, right? And they were like, oh, it's just a left arm thing and blah, blah, blah. And these guys are all similar. And so I've been looking up some stats on it. Mitch Santner has, I think, about the fifth or sixth highest release point of finger spinner, not just left arm. I think that's off spin as well. Right up at the top. Tom Hartley's was okay, but not particularly that quick. But Tom Hartley was one of the fastest spinners in the database. Mm-hmm. And Mitch Santner is not. The guy with the left arm finger spinner with one of the lowest releases is Steve O'Keefe, who's also one of the slowest spinners. So you've got Santner, who's tall but can bowl fast and slow. You've got Hartley, who's tall but very fast. And you've got Steve O'Keefe, who's short. Like, there's not really that much that connects the three of them other than they're all left arm finger spinners, which might be the most important thing. It might just be as simple as that. You can take the ball away from India's multitude of right-handers. And there's something to be said of that. But there's nothing that really links all those players other than the fact that they are, you know, mammals who bowl left arm finger spin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have to obviously consider that conditions played a role in Santner's 13 wicket test match, right? Because as per the analysis that we carried out at Good Areas, you could tell that tall spinners were at an advantage in Pune and slow spin bowling was also at an advantage. And that definitely played a role in Santner's success. Taking nothing away from him, of course.
Yeah, I know this isn't a situation where we're like, he's gone from below basement bar level to out bowling Ashwin in Jadeja. Like, all credit to him for even having the balls to go out there and give it a go, right?
Yeah.
But it was a very weird wicket. It was a wicket. I think Himinesh did a study that said that bowling slower helped. I think I had talked about that as well. It was clear that I think Ashwin tried to bowl slower, so he was seeing the same things that I was seeing. Maybe he was seeing the same things that Himinesh was seeing. He might have been fed some data by someone on the Indian side as well. So there's no doubt that it helped Santner. But also, weirdly enough, when you look at Santner's skills, you do think to yourself, well, how has he not got more wickets? Because his ability to change what he needed to on that wicket to make himself even better.
Yeah, he adapted better than all the other spinners. Maybe not Washington, but the Ashwin
even
Jadeja.
I would even say than Washington. I think he adapted better. I think with Washington bowled at full pace the whole time. He didn't try and bowl slower. It just that his height really caused the problem, and the ball skidded through for him occasionally. Whereas Mitch was actually changing things around. But if you go back to what you said, bowling slow helped, and Mitch Santner can bowl very slow. He's brilliant at varying his pace. Being tall obviously helped, and he's the fifth or third tallest, or whatever I said before. He's tall. He's got a very high release point. His release point is almost up at the level of the very tall seamers. That's how high his release point.
That would give Ben Stokes and Baz McCullum a boner, wouldn't it?
Oh, they'd love it. By the way, Shoaib Bashir is really, really high as well. They're not wrong. They're not wrong on that one. And then you've got the fact that he does actually spin the ball. So, you know, he was getting proper revs and everything on the ball. And his height also, probably even more than Washington, meant that he just seemed to get about 5 or 6 wickets from just the ball keeping low in a way that Ashwin didn't really manage. So there was clearly a bunch of different things that worked in his favor on that wicket. Having said that, as you said, he had to work it out. He didn't just bowl the same delivery over and over again, hoping for Jack Leach on that wicket would have bowled the same ball over and over again. Steve O'Keefe would have bowled the same ball over and over again. Tom Hartley, the same ball over and over again. Not slagging those guys off. Mitch Santner went, no. I'm going to try this. And he nailed it time and time again.
He was like the anti-Jack Leach, if you really think about
it. The anti-Jack Leach. Put that on a t-shirt. As a cricket journalist, I would travel up to 200 days a year. And I loved every part of it, except for one. This little evil pin here, because I needed this to change my SIM card. And when you travel in cricket, you're quite often going from country to country. Don't get me started on how much this would annoy me in the West Indies, but even going from New Zealand to Australia, this pin was the worst. Well, with the Sally eSIM, they sort all of that out for you. They have an eSIM app that you install once, it's cheap, and it works in more than 160 countries around the world. No more turning up at an airport and lining up for a local SIM, trying to give over your passport and your details, and you just want to get in a taxi and go where you're going. No, Sally make it so much easier. You just download the app before you travel and you decide what kind of plan you actually need. Oh, and if you do that with our code, GOODAREAS, all one word, you get an exclusive 15% discount on Sally eSIM data plans. So go right now and download the Sally app and use the code GOODAREAS, all one word, at checkout and travel like a pro with Sally.
You brought up a bunch of interesting things over here, right? The pace variation. It was very constant. You know, he was going from like, what, 75 mile per hour to, kilometers per
72,
hour to 97.
72, I think.
72 kilometers per hour to, 97 kilometers per hour. And it was interesting how we are told when we are like growing up and watching test cricket that you've got to put it in the same spot. He didn't do that. Sometimes it was, you know, bowling at the stumps. Sometimes he was bowling wide. And that kind of gave him an edge over the other spinners in the game, right? Because he was just mixing it up, which conventional wisdom suggests is not the right thing to do in test cricket. It's a real brain twister.
I think what he was doing is probably his pitch map wasn't erratic, right? Mm. It wasn't like Glenn Phillips's pitch map or, you know, Jason Crazier's pitch map or someone like
that. By the way, right? Daniel Sherney called Glenn Phillips Santner's little helper. I thought that was hilarious.
That's a good line. Cherney occasionally can give you a I don't want to say occasionally, it makes it sound like I'm being passive aggressive, but he can pull out a good line when he needs to. I think, you know, it's not that kind of scattered. It's more, I would say it was probably more on the Ashwin level of scattered. Mm. So you get your Nathan Lyon and Jack Leach type bowlers who generally just land the ball in the same spot over and over again. Jadeja's probably another one of those, right? Mm. And then you get that sort of more Ashwin level bowler who would just changes where they release on the crease, changes the arm position slightly at times, the pace and everything else. This is another reason why you look at Santner and you think to yourself, why has he just not got more wickets before this? Like, why is this the first time I'm seeing this work? I think from that perspective, he's not accurate. But what he is because of his height, he's not actually particularly easy to get on top of. That's why he's such a good white ball bowler, right?
Yeah.
He's not as easy to get on top of because he can bowl a little bit shorter, but you can't play him as if it's a short ball. So that's sort of Ashley Giles length, if you want to go back in time. But it also allows him to bowl a little bit fuller when he needs to bowl fuller, and he can change where he is on the crease. It's not like he's going to suddenly start bowling you wide half volleys. And it's not as if he's going to, you know, really struggle with his length or anything, but he's not put the ball on a handkerchief. He's more, I'm going to keep changing things so that you can't get on top of what I'm doing. Mm. And that is probably a T20 skill, right? I wonder if Ashwin would have done that without T20. Like, I feel like a lot of Ashwin stuff comes from, you know, in T20 always having to be one step ahead.
It's fascinating you bring that up because, you know, we think of or even speak of Santner. We're literally speaking of him right now like that he is this unlikely hero that has emerged from Pune. But if you really think about it, this man loves to bowl in India. Let's go back to 2016, the T20 World Cup, completely dismantled India along with East Sodhi. Go back to the ODI World Cup last year. He surprised all of us, right? At one point, he was the leading wicket taker. So maybe India is
into that series, Like, there were questions from New Zealand about him, right? And there are a lot of, like, CSK fans like, no, he'll be fine. So, like, the rest of the world, like, I had talks with people where they were just like, we don't know how good Santner's going to be.
Yeah, and clearly he enjoys bowling in India. And, I mean, he was this white ball specialist, or at least known for his white ball stuff. And now he's kind of bucked that trend. And it's interesting to see where he goes from there. But before we go there, right, there was this one finding from your piece that I really, really enjoyed. And I think that really tells you how well he bowled and how, you know, you can't just put this down to the conditions. You checked both ends of the Pune pitch, right? And you noted how the ball was doing a bit more on one of the ends. Santner, however, bowled from both ends, and he was quite successful at the bad end as well. So he was inevitable, Jared.
Yeah, I think it's a remarkable wicket, that Pune wicket. The last two pitches have been really fascinating, what they've done. I think his ability to be able to work that pitch out, really, I wonder if he's just leveled up as a thinker. And so, you know, I had Gareth Batty and Monty Panesar, so I had two international finger spinners commentating with me.
Yeah.
And Gareth Batty was just saying he just looks like someone who's worked out what he can do now. And the problem with it, yeah, I call it the Ishant Sharma problem, right? And Zach Crawley's going to have this same one. If you've been around forever and you have a crap record, if you have a good 3 or 4 years, right, most people still don't buy it. And your overall average doesn't look great, right? Your overall average still doesn't get good. And then you have a natural regression for a couple of games or a couple of tests, and everyone's like, he's finished. Get rid of him. He's done. And I think Mitch Santner might have that. But within that, it does mean that if New Zealand get 4 years out of him where he averages 32 to 35, we know he can bat a little bit. We know he can help out in the field. You know, he's captaining one of their limited oversides, I think, coming up at the moment. You know, he's a smart cricketer. No one's ever had any questions with him. You know, he's a four-tool cricketer. He thinks he can move around the field. He can bat a little bit, and he can bowl, right? Like, he might not be great in any of those skills. But if he does hit a 3 or 4 year period where all that comes together, New Zealand have a very important cricketer over the next couple of years. And a week ago, no one would have thought that was possible. If Michael Bracewell's wife was due a month later, no one would have thought that was possible.
Yeah, that is really incredible if you think about it. Also, just to tell all of our viewers and listeners, this has been recorded in between test matches. So by the time you listen to it, Santner's definitely played in that Wankhede test.
He's either taken 13 more wickets or got hit for 13 sixes.
Yeah, we don't know as of yet what will happen. But you spoke about how he might have unlocked a new level or skill or whatever at the age of 32. And, you know, New Zealand surfaces don't really encourage spin bowlers. You don't get to bowl a lot of spin over there, not like bulk overs or anything. Do you think that plays a role in the stunted development potentially for Santner as a test spinner?
Well, the 10,000 balls, I suppose, is probably the bigger issue. But yeah, I think it's a combination of both. I brought this up while we were talking before and I forgot to mention it. If you look at his career in first class cricket, and this includes him in test matches. But a lot of the first, if you look at, he played one game for Worcester. Didn't know that. Anyway, if you look at him for Northern Districts, he's basically batted at number 5 and number 6 fairly consistently. Right? More so than he's kind of batted anywhere else. And then when he I said 5 and 6. I meant 6 and 7.
Okay, that makes more sense.
And then when he plays for New Zealand, he bats a little bit more at 8 and 9 at times, right? That tells you that there's always been an element of him being playing for his batting, and probably, and Bairam, you and I have talked about this a million times, he's probably been the fifth bowler.
Yes.
And being the fifth bowler in New Zealand quite often means that you're not going to play at all. Whereas if you're picking Ish Sodhi, probably going to bowl him a lot of overs in the games that he plays because you're not going to get much out of him with the bat, right?
But his batting helps him, right? Because he could play home tests because of it.
Santner?
Yes.
Yeah, it helps him, but it hinders him because if he's seen as an all-rounder and you've got four other bowlers, you're probably going to roll through your four other bowlers first, especially in New Zealand. Whereas if you're picking three bowlers and Ish Sodhi is your spinner, you're probably going to have to bowl Ish Sodhi, right? Yes. So it helps the team and it might help him if he gets good, but it might not have helped him develop as much as a specialist bowler might have over there. Now, having said all that, being Jeetan Patel and Ajaz Patel hasn't particularly helped those guys all that much either. Mm-hmm. So it just sucks to be a New Zealand bowler when it comes to bowling spin. Let's just be honest. It's a terrible decision to make in your life. You know, in New Zealand, if you decide to be an opening batter or a spinner, or in Mark Richardson's case, both, it's the absolute worst decision you can make in your life. And so he hasn't developed.
Yeah. Sorry, complete your thought.
No, I was just going to say, so he hasn't developed, right? And then he hasn't played as much first-class cricket as all these other guys, as we were talking about before. So he hasn't developed there. Maybe now he's learned a little bit over the last couple of years of just how to make himself more successful when he needs to take wickets. Hmm. And he's in that situation where he can take it to another level. He's 32. There are lots of spinners who mature between the age of 30 and 33. The difference between him and most spinners is we've been watching him bowl for 10 years.
Yeah. It is true, right? And I mean, when I look at New Zealand's squad composition, particularly when it comes to home test matches, because he's probably bought himself a lot of test matches in Asia and the West Indies and all of that right after this performance. But if you look at their squad for home tests, you've got Rachin Ravindra, probably batting at four, can bowl a bit of spin. You have potentially someone like Glenn Phillips in the team, you know, who is a proper batter and can bowl a bit of spin. And then you throw in Mitch Santner, right? Who is primarily a bowler, but can bat and field and is a thinker. Then you just load your 11 with fast bowlers and have them play with these, you know, all-round spin options. And I feel like that kind of checks out.
If Mitch Santner can be the same level of bowler in home tests, and I'm not expecting him to take 13 wickets in a whole series, let alone in one match in home tests. But if he can be the same level of bowler so that you can't hit him away and that he does get a few wickets, and even if he averages 35 in New Zealand, and it plays as a holding bowler, and you get a little bit of batting out of him, that makes their team so much better.
Yeah.
Right? They basically, you know, I don't know if I've told you this story, but like we were talking about how New Zealand was struggling so much with spin that they basically used Colin de Grandhomme as a spinner when he was in the side. And this is on the radio. Colin de Grandhomme was listening and found it very funny. But that's if you go back and you watch that team, they used Neil Wagner and Colin de Grandhomme as their spinners. Right? They had Colin de Grandhomme wobbling the ball at one end, and they had essentially Neil Wagner bowling into the rough at the other end, right? Like that was their plan, was to bore people out with these, you know, sort of defensive options. The ability to be able to do that with Santner, I think, is much more important, right? And could be much better. I don't know if this is completely transformed, if this is something he can use outside, but watching him in that test match, because people will say things like, oh, yeah, but the wicket was really helpful to him. And it's like, what, the wicket wasn't helpful to him in Sri Lanka?
Yeah, absolutely, right?
Like, what are we talking about? He'd played 8 tests in Asia before this and been routinely shit in every one. There is no, it's very hard to watch him in this test match and not think he's a better bowler now than before.
Yeah.
As you said, we're recording this middle of the way through. People might be watching this podcast when he's like 1 for 280 in the next game. I still don't think that means he's not a better bowler than he used to be, because I think before, I don't think he had 13 wickets in a summer in him, let alone in a game.
I mean, if Monty and Gareth Batty are saying that he might have learned something new over here, then I mean, I trust those guys. And look, this is a guy who before the Pune test was averaging less than 2 wickets a test match, right? So, I mean, I completely get you. This could be a one-off, an outlier, or this could be the start of something new. But before we kind of get to that, sorry, you're saying something.
No. But so, if he, let's say he averages 2 wickets a test. If he gets it up to 2.5, right?
Yeah.
I think it would be absolutely fine if he takes 2 for 70, 2 for 95, those sorts of figures. That is a huge step up on what he was doing beforehand for New Zealand.
Yeah. One more thing that was happening on the Pune track, which you kind of, you know, honed into and narrowed down, was that, you know, he was generating some variable bounce. I couldn't quite understand what you were trying to tell us over there. So can you just shed some light on that?
So he bowls short. So his natural length, you know, like that's a fairly common thing. Just tall bowlers quite often can bowl a little bit shorter. It's an ability with the spinners to be able to do that, especially stronger tall bowlers. It's a very Western way of bowling. Uh-huh. And because he was doing that, he was landing the ball at about 5.5 meters, which generally is the sort of ball you should be able to go back to and play with a straight bat and not really have many issues to.
Yeah.
Have a look at what happened to Virat Kohli and have a look at what happened to a few of the other batters. He had the ability to be able to skid that through. I think he found a length where he knew that about 1 in 12, 1 in 15 balls would shoot through. And he managed to either his bowling was different enough from the other guys to be able to do this in the game, or that's a natural length for him. And he was just like, great, I'm just going to keep landing it there. And these other guys are going to miss that length. But yeah, he knew that there was a certain patience in his bowling because he knew that the surface would assist him. But he also found that. And if you go back through, I think the vast majority of the wickets that came from balls keeping low were from Santner. So he found that and went for it and made it work. Again, it's all well and good to go, oh, the pitch was in his favor. It was. He found the bit that was in his favor. And then, you know, like when you're playing on the Xbox, you know, you start spamming it. He started spamming it and got himself to a position where it did really well.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, just to kind of get this down correctly, would you say that it's a length that other spinners did not manage to find? Or is it more so something that Santner is doing specifically that he is able to extract out of that length?
I have to go back through all the data, but Varun, we need Varun on this one. But my memory was that it was from the other end of where Ashwin and Sundar were bowling, and it wasn't the good end. And so at one end, he was just bowling on the stumps and you know, letting the pitch do the work for him. And at the other end, he was bowling shorter and everything else. But the fact that he found that is the magic. Now, it could also be a combination of his extra height. So he's a little bit taller than Ashwin and, well, his release point's a little bit taller than Washington and Ashwin. It could be that because he was slowing it down, right? It was there was an element of that. But it could also just be that his natural length, Washington is a really full bowler.
Yeah. Like, and he was getting it to rip, right? It was different to what Santner was doing.
Exactly. You watch Washington, and I've always said this. One thing I've always found interesting about him is how full he bowls, especially for a taller spinner, as we said before. He's more like a Rakim Cornwall type spinner, where you're just like, those guys bowl really, really full. So a very different kind of bowler in that kind of way. But there's something about Santner that he did that. To me, it doesn't really matter whether it was just his style of bowling that brought it out or not. He worked that out, and he went with it. And that's the thing that I think if we go through, he's never done that before, right? There would have been times in Sri Lanka, there would have been conditions in his favor, and he never worked out how to make them work. Like in Sri Lanka, you want to bowl a little bit slower. You want to bowl like Herath rather than like Ashwin.
Who, right? By the way, is his bowling coach right now, isn't he?
Yeah. So you want to bowl like Herath, and you want to bowl a little bit slower, right? And probably a little bit fuller maybe in Sri Lanka than you do in India in general. Well, he can do all that, and he didn't take any wickets.
Yeah.
Well, so as you said, what are we talking about here?
There's something about Santner which would make a great movie title, maybe a future docu-series on Mitch Santner, but it all comes down to adaptability. So yes, the conditions favored him, but he adapted to them. He extracted the most out of them, and there's a reason why he has 13 wickets, right? So all credit to him, I suppose. But
Can we just I know you're going to close up. I want to finish with one thing. New Zealand's last two tours of India have had a bloke we never heard of take 10 wicketsin an innings.
Yep.
They've got a wicket keeper who is their second main spinner at the moment, in Glenn Phillips. Their other spinner has gone home to have the birth of his kid and hasn't even played in a test in this series. Last time they came over with Will Somerville, who played club cricket in Sydney and played for New South Wales before he played for New Zealand. And now Mitch Santner's taken a 13-wicket haul. New Zealand spin stories are fucking insane.
Yeah, you could do a series on them, honestly. We could do stupid cricket on New Zealand spinners.
I can't, because I did that huge series on their opening batters. I just don't think I can go back into their spinners. But yeah, I mean, Deepak Patel, there's a lot to unpack with Deepak Patel and the man who invented opening the bowling with spin in limited overs cricket, right? But anyway.
Yeah, go back to the 92 World Cup to figure out what Jared is talking about, and you'll know all about Deepak Patel. But anyway, just to kind of close off over here, of course, he would have already bowled in the Mumbai test by the time this comes out. But I just want to ask you, right? And I know you're not some sort of fortune teller, but you are an analyst. And I want to know whether you think, you know, or what do you think the future holds for Mitch Santner in test cricket? Will he experience some sort of unexpected peak from here? Or is this a one-off?
Yeah, unexpected peak might be him bowling, averaging 35, right? Yeah. Like, I'm not expecting him to average 28 and have like a Graham Swan peak from here on in. But I could see him, I just think he's too smart a cricketer and his talents are too wide for him not to be successful over a period of time. I don't believe that is the case. And what I watched in the last test match was not, I didn't think I was watching Tom Hartley or Michael Clarke or Joe Root. Mm-hmm. I thought what I was watching was someone who in multiple different ways worked out how the surface would assist him and then put the ball in a dangerous area. He might not take a lot of wickets in at Wankhede. I'm not saying that that is the case, but what I am saying is I now see a path forward for him as a test cricketer. And to be honest, I did not see that before Pune.
I don't think anyone saw that, right? I mean, whoever had Mitch Santner down as player of the match for the Pune test would have made a killing. But just for shits and giggles then, before we close this off, make a prediction. Santner's wicket count at the Wankhede.
Do you know what? I went looking today, and I don't know what the wicket's going to do, so I don't know how much spin it's going to be. And then, so someone else actually asked me what one of the spreads, and again, I don't have the information, you know, to be able to do that. I mean, if you want me to be safe, I would probably say that he's on for 5 wickets in the game, right? But I don't know what kind of wicket it's going to be. I kind of feel like it might be a wicket that helps spin, pace, and batting a little bit. Like as in that, that was the last rumor I heard. But the rumor I heard before that is it was going to spin sideways. So I'm not over there. And so you can't sniff around and see what is real and what is not real. But yeah, I think Santner has a more regular... here's my prediction. He just has a more regular game here. I'm not saying he doesn't bowl... I'm not saying he doesn't get hit occasionally, and I'm not saying he doesn't bowl some good balls, but I think he has a regular game. I'd be very surprised if he took Numfa or he took Tenfa. Like, those would be the things that would surprise me. Whereas beforehand, Numfa was on the table.
1 for 280, as you said before, right? It was a believable sort of... I don't know, believable figures, I suppose. But yeah, I would say 4 to 5 wickets at least. But let's see. I do expect India to bounce back, but can we even say that with certainty?
We've been saying that about India for a couple of weeks now, and they have not bounced back. So hopefully, hopefully there's been some sort of bounce back, and people are listening to this going, of course they're going to bounce back.
Yeah, I mean, people will be listening to this and saying, like, why are you talking about this? It's already happened. But anyway... Yeah. Thank you for sticking with us for the end of this podcast. And yeah, just a quick reminder, you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. And that can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the work that we do as part of our team, whether it be written content, podcasts, or videos. That's all for this particular episode of Footmarks, but we'll be back with even more content soon enough. Have a good one, guys, and goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make any content, Minvo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minvo.pro now.